Hi, and welcome to Law for Community Workers On The Go. This is a series of podcasts brought to you by Legal Aid New South Wales. In each episode, one of us from the Community Legal Education branch will be chatting to experts on different legal topics. We're really excited to have you all listening today, and we hope that you'll learn something new and interesting.
Hi, my name's Natalie. I'm from the Community Legal Education team here at Legal Aid New South Wales. Today on this podcast, I'll be chatting to Julianne Elliott from the Legal Aid New South Wales Children's Legal Service. Before we start, I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land that we are broadcasting from today, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and pay our respects to elders past and present, and also extend that respect to any Indigenous Australians listening today. Hi, Julianne.
Hi. Thanks for having me along today.
So we're going to be chatting today about the Children's Legal Service at Legal Aid, and in particular, if you're a community worker or youth worker or family support worker who's listening in today, you'll find out a bit more about the Children's Legal Service, what they do, types of young people that they support, and how to send people to your service. And we'll hear also from Julianne about just what she loves about working at the Children's Legal Service, what a typical day is, what they get up to at the Children's Legal Service. So Julianne, you've been there for quite a while, haven't you?
That's right, yeah, it's coming up to 10 years I've worked with the Children's Legal Service.
And what got you into working with young people in the law?
I was, before this job, before I was a lawyer, I was working as a youth worker in a refuge in King's Cross, and we had a lot of young people there who were finding themselves in a bit of trouble with the police, and I never really knew how to answer their questions, or if the police came to the door of the refuge, I didn't know whether we could let them in or not, and I realised that that was something that youth workers didn't always know a lot about, so I asked for some training. We had a really awesome lawyer come along, Jane Sanders from the Shopfront Youth Legal Centre, and she talked to us about police powers and young people's rights on the streets and in public places, and I was like, yeah, that's the job I want. I want to be somebody who can support young people with their legal rights. And so, yeah, here I am.
That's great. And your role at the Children's Legal Service is in community education.
That's
right.
Have
you always done that role?
Yep, I've always been involved in community legal education, but I've also done over the years some court work and some advice work with young people too. So seen all the different sides of the service.
Yeah, that will be really interesting to hear about. And can we just talk first about when you talk about young people, because I know some community organisations who work with young people, they might be up to age 25, is that right? Mm. But the Children's Legal Service has a different definition?
That's right. We go on the definition of what matters the children's court would hear. So we go up to 18. So once a young person has turned 18, for police matters, for crimes, they can't be charged as a child anymore in New South Wales once they're 18, so they move on to the adult service. So for our service, generally speaking, it's up to 18 is what we mean by children or young people.
Yeah. And are there some exceptions with traffic matters where children are not dealt with in the children's court?
That's right. If a young person is old enough to have a license, so either they're 16 and 9 months for a motorbike license or 17 for car licenses. If they commit a traffic offence, so if they're driving under the influence of alcohol or something like that, then they'd go to the local court. If they've never been old enough to hold a license, so if they were somehow driving while they're 13, obviously a few issues there, but they'd come to us at the children's court. Because they've never not too common. No, I mean, sometimes they get sent to the wrong places and we have to, you know, work out, are they meant to be in the children's court or the local court, looking at their age, looking at the, you know, was the car stolen, that kind of thing can affect it too. So yeah, a little bit of that.
So Julianne, can you tell us first, what is the Children's Legal Service at Legal Aid New South Wales?
Thanks, Nat. Yeah, that's a good place to start. The Children's Legal Service is a special part of Legal Aid. It sits in the Criminal Law Division, so anything to do with police and young people, the Children's Legal Service are generally dealing with. We do about three or four different things as part of our daily work. Firstly, if we have young people who are being charged and sent to court, we run what we call a duty service for children at all the children's courts around New South Wales. So that's either with our legal aid staff or with private lawyers who will pick up that duty work if they're in more further afield country areas. But all young people will be automatically represented for free if they're charged by the police and are sent to court, or if they have an apprehended violence order as a defendant. So we'll represent young people. So we'll go through the facts, we'll go through the charges, and we'll also read through the police facts with them and make sure they understand everything that's going on. We'll give them some advice. They tell us what they want us to do. Do they want to plead guilty or not guilty? And then we'll go into court and speak for them so they don't have to. So that's probably the thing that we're most well known for. Mm. We also run the Legal Aid Youth Hotline. It's very important that that everyone remembers that that's available for young people. Most of the time, that's a phone line that will be used because a young person's with police in the first place, and they're going to need to have some advice about whether they want to do an interview or not.
And the number is
1800 10 18 10.
Great, very easy to remember.
It is. And also, I just wanted to add on that you don't have to be with the police to call that number. If young people have questions about, you know, can the police search me, or I've got a fine, I don't know what to do about it, that kind of stuff, give us a call as well and we can help.
And is that a 24-hour number?
It's from 9 a.m. till midnight during the week, and on the weekends it's 24 hours, yeah. But especially for the youth workers and community workers that are listening today, if you have a young person who has questions, they're a bit nervous to call themselves, please feel free to call with them. As long as we know they're there, we're happy to talk to you about what's happening. We just can't talk to you without the young person there, because we don't want a situation where you're trying to pass on advice along the way.
And that's the phone number is answered by lawyers, so the young person gets to talk, get legal advice straight away over the phone.
That's right. You'll be talking to a lawyer to get advice about criminal law matters. So that's for under 18s.
Yep. Excellent. And you said there were three or four things you do.
That's right. Yeah. So the other two things are visiting all of the juvenile justice centres. So juvenile justice centres are where young people are locked up in New South Wales. They're separate from adult correction centres. And we make sure that we have weekly visits to young people in those centres so we can pick up on any issues if they want to apply for bail or they want to talk to someone about making an appeal against their sentence. That kind of thing, then they can always see somebody from our service. And, of course, the last thing we do is the work that I mostly do these days, which is the community legal education and crime prevention work. We go to schools, youth services. We've been known to do midnight basketball sessions or workshops in skate parks, anywhere where I can get a bunch of kids to sit still long enough to listen to what I have to say. I'll try and give them some information about how the criminal law works and how to avoid getting into trouble. We also run lots of workshops on those topics with community workers and youth workers as well. And, of course, it's all free.
And if people listening want you to come out and talk to young people they work with, how would they get in touch with you?
They can email me or call me, and if you look below the podcast, you'll find the contact details there. Please be in touch. Love to hear from you. Before we move on, I think I'd like to also mention that anyone can call the Legal Aid Youth Hotline, but if the young person goes into custody and they're Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander, they should also be given a chance to call the Custody Notification Service as well.
And do you work with interpreters? Do you have many young people who might not have English as a first language?
Absolutely. Yeah. So from time to time, we do get calls from young people whose English is not their first language, or they're having a bit of trouble keeping up with the advice for some reason, and we can definitely arrange to have an interpreter on the telephone as well.
So I think we'll talk a bit later about the alternatives for young people to be actually arrested by the police. But if a young person is at a police station, so they're given the number by the police, so do they have to be given the number?
Police must do that.
They call you, and are they saying, I'm just at the police station, what do I do?
So first of all, what we do is we talk to the police officer, usually either the officer in charge of the investigation or the custody manager, and they're going to give us a bit of a rundown about what's happened from the police's side, what they're thinking of doing. Are they thinking of charging the young person, a little bit about the offence, and then we'll get to speak to the young person. Once we speak to the young person, we're going to let them know what the police have said, and give them a chance to say whether they agree with what the police say happened or not. And depending on the crime and depending on whether the young person thinks that they did or didn't do it, we'll give some advice about what to do next.
I know that there's some particular rights people have in Australia with police, and that's particularly for young people as well. So do young people understand, like if you say you have the right to silence, do young people tend to understand what that means?
Yeah, it's actually very interesting because in my education work, I often say, has anyone heard, in police shows or movies about police, something about you've got the right to remain silent, and then all of a sudden all these kids can actually just say word for word the American version of you've got the right to remain silent, anything you do say will be held against you. So in this way, like, popular culture is our friend. They definitely know the words, they're familiar, and then it's just a matter of explaining what that means in practice. I mean, I think they're familiar with the words, but especially in a situation where young people are at the police station, it's a very different from being in a classroom and kind of, being able to think about it in a bit of a funnier way. At the police station, there are a lot of nerves, but we do take a lot of time to explain what the right to silence means. For some young people, this is going to be very important. And the right to silence definitely means that you have a choice about whether you do the interview with the police or not. And for a young person, no one can think anything bad about the young person just because they decided not to do an interview.
That's what you tell them.
That's good. So the police can't think you're guilty just because you don't want to do an interview, and neither can the courts. It's just a right that we all have. Then again, you do decide to do an interview and they record everything against you, and they can use your statement to prove charges against you. So it's a really big decision, and luckily in New South Wales, young people don't have to make that decision by themselves. They can call a lawyer and talk about it and think about what their options are.
And if they do decide to do an interview, does it mean they have to have a support worker with them?
That's right.
Or they have a right to?
They have to. So that's another have to. They have to be allowed to get advice from a lawyer, and they have to have a support person there. And I think that makes sense. If you imagine a young person sitting in a room with two adult uniformed police officers, there's a bit of a power imbalance there. And the way we try and sort that out is to make sure that there's someone there for the young person who's on their side, who can stick up for their rights if something needs to be done. So they, maybe they're getting quite upset and they'd prefer to stop the interview, then a support person can step in and say, actually, we need to stop the interview now.
A support person, sometimes a family member, or it can be a youth worker.
That's right. Yeah. So the younger kids will usually have a parent or a carer. So once you turn 14, though, you can choose who you want to have with you. So oftentimes a young person might choose a different family member apart from parents, or sometimes a youth worker or a community elder. If the young person has nobody at all, there is always a list of independent support people that the police can call, but that interview cannot happen without a support person. Yeah.
I was just thinking about the downside of kids knowing all the popular culture, particularly from America, where young people think that the emergency number is 911 and not 000.
I have, but then also one of the young people told me in a workshop that they're actually diverting calls to 000 now. If you call 911, then you'll still get through.
Can you talk a little bit about what age a young person can be charged by the police or stopped by the police?
So in terms of being charged, nobody can be charged for a crime if they're under 10. And I think we can all see why that might be the case. If you've got like, you know, 2 5-year-olds in preschool having a bit of a scuffle, I don't think many people would consider that's a thing that the police should step in for. And I guess the thinking around that is that you're too young to really know what is the difference between what's a crime and what's something that's naughty and that, you know, you shouldn't do. It's a big difference. And so once you turn 10 and before you turn 14, there's this kind of in-between age where you can be charged. But there's a defence available at court called Dolly Incapax, which basically means that the police will have to prove that you knew what you did was a crime rather than something that was naughty.
Yeah. And then from 14 to 17, that's the main age range that of young people you see at the Children's Legal Service?
Well, we do sometimes see young people as young as 10 because they can be charged and sent to court, but it's true that generally speaking it's a 14 to 17 is a more common age, and once young people get to 14 that defence isn't available to them anymore.
And what happens, so we've been talking about young people getting arrested, so there are a few steps before that can happen, is that right? Police need to think about other options before actually charging a young person?
Sure, yes. Before charging a young person, the police do have some other options. In the late 90s, we brought in this, I keep saying we, in the late 90s, the government brought in a bit of law called the Young Offenders Act, and it meant that we now have some more options to deal with young people instead of sending them straight to court. It's only in some cases, and I can talk about that a little bit more in a second, but there has been some research around for a while that suggests that the earlier that a young person comes to court for the first time, the more often they might come back to court in the future. So if we can kind of put off that first time that they go to court, it's better for the young person generally in the long run. And this diversion plan helps a lot with that. So,
and what's the role? So, what's involved in the diversion? How does it look in practice?
The two main options are cautions and conferences. And a lot of people who might be listening might have heard those terms before. Okay, so a caution basically is a situation where instead of being charged, the young person is given a stern talking to, I suppose, by the police. And they might explain, you know, the effect of the crime on the community, and they hope that they never see the young person down at the station again. You have to admit to the offence, though, if you want to get that caution.
So we're talking about young people who are in the police station. So if they have a right to not give an interview, they need a support person. That's a lot of really helpful information. But even before that stage, so even before they get to the police station, are there other steps that might happen before that? Like a police stop a young person?
Yeah, we do often, young people are very often very interested about what the police can and can't do. And we answer, well, in my education work, I answer a lot of questions about, can the police stop and search me? Can they ask me what my name is? Are they allowed to move me on from the train station if I'm just standing there with my friends? So we do a lot of work around that, not just giving them the answers to those questions, but also trying to work with them to give them some examples of how to deal with that interaction with police in a really calm way, so that nobody's, you know, getting more charges coming out of police interactions that can be sometimes a little bit stressful for some young people. So we might kind of do a role model example of the worst way to deal with a police and then contrast it with the best way to deal with that situation if you're getting a bit stressed. But the answers to all of those questions and more can be found in a really useful little booklet that we have available online called Get Street Smart. You can order copies of that for free. You can look up lots of answers about searches, about sniffer dogs, about when you have to answer police questions and when you don't. Another popular topic is what security guards can do differently from police. And we also have a little pull-out card at the back that has the phone number for the Legal Aid Youth Hotline on it so they can put it in their wallet or take a photo of it and keep it on their phone.
1-800-10-1810.
Yes.
Yeah, no, they're great little booklets. Do order those. And what about sort of alternatives to police arresting young people if they have done something wrong?
Mm. Yeah, so we're quite lucky in New South Wales in a way that since the late 90s we have this little bit of law in place called the Young Offenders Act, which gives police a little bit of choice about how to deal with some matters if they're kind of not so serious. So I guess a common example, especially on Thursday nights on the hotline, might be a young person stopped outside Supre, let's just say, or Rebel Sport, and they've got some piece of clothing under their other clothing that they haven't paid for. So what happens then is the police will speak to them and they'll say, you need to call the Legal Aid Youth Hotline first before we decide what we do next. And the young person will get on the phone and we'll have a chat to them. Now, this is a very simple example because there's really not going to be usually a defence available. Yeah. They're outside the shop. They obviously didn't pay for the shorts or the skirt or whatever. And so this might be a really good time for them to think about getting a caution. It's not as serious as some of the other charges that we see. And most of the time, especially if the young person's never been in trouble before, the police will definitely be considering a caution. So what we would say is, look, if you agree with what the police say happens, you can do a police interview and have this dealt with by way of caution instead of having to go to court.
So the caution's still done at the police station?
Yes, yeah. The caution will be done at the police station. First, before you can get the caution, though, you have to admit to the offence. And that's why I'm saying it's a very simple case to deal with, because telling a young person to give up their right to silence can be a big deal.
Yeah.
In some more serious matters, you have to think very carefully about, you know, do we go with the Young Offenders Act option or do we tell them to not do an interview or give them the advice to not do an interview?
And they'd still have the support person with them for that interview.
Yes.
Before caution.
Exactly. Yeah. So once they're in the interview and they want to say what they did, they only have to say what they did on that day with that event happening and only what they did, not what anyone else did. So as long as they do that, they come back another day with a support person and the police will deliver the caution, which is basically a bit of a telling off about how they don't want to see them at the police station again and how much money it costs to pray in lost money when people shoplift from their store. And for a lot of young people, this is very effective. You know, their parents have found out, they've had to be at the police station, it can be very scary. So it's one way that we can deal with things without having to go to court.
And under the Young Offenders Act, is there a limit to how many cautions a young person can get?
Yeah, there is. You can only ever get 3 cautions. Yeah. And after that, the police will think, well, will we send them for a conference instead or will we send them to court?
What's a conference?
A youth justice conference is a form of what we would call restorative justice. It's kind of a bit of a buzzword over the years about how we look at different ways of dealing with crime. It means that the young person has to sit down and really think about the crime. The victim might be there at the conference or they might not be, but the young person certainly will be there with a support person, with a conference convener, with a youth liaison officer from the police, and they'll come up with ways to say sorry. make up for the crime that they've committed.
Yeah. In the shoplifting example, the victim would be the store manager or something.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. So they might write a letter of apology, or they might have to do some volunteer work or something like that. But the young person is involved in making that plan. And they're also involved in listening to how a victim feels and have to think about how it's affected their family. So, yeah, so the young person has to really reflect on what's happened.
Are there lawyers from Children's Legal Service involved in the conference?
Not usually. No, it's not. It's not a place where lawyers would normally go unless they're just observing. Yeah.
And then if the caution is not an option or is justice conference is not an option, then it's the children's court.
That's right, yeah. So then they'd be given some paperwork to say when they have to go to court and the police will decide, do they give the young person bail until their court date or are they going to be held in custody during that time?
And so what would... youth worker or community worker be able to tell a young person who comes to them and says, I've got this piece of paper that says I have to go to court, what would they be able to tell them of what to expect?
I guess it's important the young person knows that they will be represented for free, so there will be someone there to go to court for them. They'll have their own lawyer. It's important for the workers to know about the Legal Aid Youth Hotline or the Aboriginal Custody Notification Service, or to be in touch with the Aboriginal Legal Service, and just perhaps that they can call the Legal Aid Youth Hotline if they've got questions about what's going to happen.
What about a few really practical things, I guess, when the young person goes to court? It's a pretty scary place, court. Can they have a support person with them?
Yeah.
Inside the court?
Yeah, it's really...
So they have their lawyer and a youth worker or a family member.
It's really useful, actually, for young people going to court. If they have someone from the family available to go, I know it's not always easy when people are working and so on, but the court does like to see that the young person's supported. That's always a good idea if a family member or a carer can come with them on the day.
So, Julianne, this has all been really interesting and informative, so thank you so much. But if people want more information, if they want to delve deeper into some of these topics for young people, so either information for young people themselves or for community workers or youth workers, where can they go? Where can they find more information?
Well, we have a lot of resources online if you go to the publications section on our internet, so www.legalaid.nsw.gov.au. But also, if you want to be in touch with me, we can arrange to hold free workshops with you. So the topics that we generally do workshops on are young people in the criminal law, which is basically an expanded version of what we've been talking about today. We've got workshops that cover group offending and your rights in custody for young people called Burn. We've got workshops that cover social media and sexting and image-based abuse stuff, as well as police powers and traffic law. So, hit us up if you want to have any of those workshops come out to you.
I might give that email address. I think it's on the podcast information, but it's just CLS, which stands for Children's Legal Service, CLE, which stands for Community Legal Education, at legalaid.nsw.gov.au. So, Julianne, just to finish off, if there were three most important things or messages you would want youth workers or community workers to take away and to help the young people they work with, what would those three most important things be?
The first is always remember the Legal Aid Youth Hotline. Okay, so unless most of the time we're going to be able to answer any questions that you and your client have about the criminal law. And the young person should always be reminded that they have the right to call us if the police want to talk to them about something they think they've done wrong.
Which is 1800 10 1810.
Yeah.
If you can't remember.
young people should always remember that they have the right to silence. They don't have to do a police interview if they don't want to. That's super important. And like I said before, thanks to the hotline, they don't have to make that decision by themselves. And just remembering as well that you're always going to have a lawyer at court that will represent you for free. That's not something that we want you to ever have to worry about in a stressful situation like being caught up in some dramas with the police. We're there to help you and we're there to help you for free.
Thanks, Julianne. That's been excellent. And I think young people in New South Wales will really benefit from more and more people knowing all that information. So thank you so much.
Not at all.
See you next time.
Great.
What do you mean next time?
Hi, everyone. Just a quick correction in this episode. Please note that young people are able to apply for a license once they turn 16, not 17. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in today. If you're enjoying Law for Community Workers on the Go, make sure to spread the word. And if you have any feedback or even topic suggestions, please get in touch with us via email. Our address is cle@legalaid.newsouthwales.gov.au. We'd love to hear from you. So until next time, thanks again from the CLE branch here at Legal Aid New South Wales.